With the state of today's economy, it is more important than ever to invest in products that last for years to come. As the seasons shift and get cooler, make sure your closet is stocked with durable layers that stand the test of time from American Giant. American Giant's clothes work harder and are wearable season after season. Their greatest hoodie ever made is made of the highest quality materials that are cut and sewn right here in the United States. So you're investing right back into your local community. Choosing American Giant means taking a stand for American manufacturing and hardworking Americans, something other mega corporations don't care about. From fleece to knit, all in a range of colors for versatile daily wear, American Giant delivers everyday pieces designed for everyday life. Feel the difference of quality made-to-last clothes from American Giant. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
Okay, let's unpack this. Today we're doing a deep dive into something quite profound, really. It's a philosophy that's quickly becoming a global movement.
Right.
It aims to fundamentally rewrite, you know, the operating system of global leadership itself.
Yeah.
The Awakened Leadership Movement, or ALM, founded by Sandeep Mehra.
And it's important to stress, this isn't like just another think tank or some new political party popping up.
No, definitely not.
It presents itself as a complete integrated framework for governance. That's the key difference.
Exactly. And our sources for this dive, they're the core materials, the foundational documents, the manifestos, descriptions, straight from the movement's own website.
Yep, primary sources. And our mission today, it's critical, really. We need to get past maybe the aspirational language and actually analyze the comprehensive structure they've built. We're talking charters, principles, even AI tools, and these five specific governance arms.
All designed, they claim, to restore purpose, coherence, and crucially, trust in global systems.
Which feels sorely needed right now.
Absolutely. So we have to start with your diagnosis. What's the fundamental problem? What's broken that ALM says it can fix?
Well, according to ALM, it's way more systemic than just, you know, bad policy choices or election cycles.
They go deeper.
Much deeper. The problem, as they define it, is this complete erosion of legitimacy. And it's rooted in a fundamental absence of clarity.
Okay. Lack of clarity leading to loss of legitimacy.
Precisely. They argue our current leadership and governance are stuck in a crisis where key institutions, you know, the big ones, they've collapsed into what ALM calls performance and narratives.
Performance and narratives. That distinction feels really important.
It is.
It suggests leaders are more focused on the show, the theater of governing the optics, short-term political wins, the posturing.
Exactly. Rather than the actual substance, the duty, the service they're supposed to provide.
So the vision gets lost.
Completely. Governments, they say, reduce grand visions down to just securing the next vote bank, serving narrow transactional interests. The long-term coherence, gone.
And when leaders operate behind these kinds of masks, well, societies feel it, right?
Inevitably. They feel cheated, uncertain, totally misaligned with the systems meant to serve them.
Yeah.
ALM sees this not just as a political failure, though. That's key. They see it as a deep, human, almost spiritual deficit within the systems themselves.
Okay, so if that's the crisis, this noise, performance, narrow interest, then ALM positions itself as the answer, the convergence point for a solution.
That's exactly the claim. They describe it quite boldly as the official global framework.
The official one, wow.
Yeah, designed to restore purpose to power and clarity to leadership and governance, right at that critical intersection of power, policy, technology, diplomacy, and public trust.
It's a huge mandate. And the core idea is about restoring something called living human intelligence, LHI.
LHI, yes, that's central. The framework's whole existence is built on bringing this LHI back into systems that have become, well, disconnected from their own humanity, you could say.
So LHI isn't just being smart, then. It's more than intellect.
Much more. It's intelligence that's uncorrupted. Uncorrupted by fear, by ego, and it's expressed through specific principles, resilient models, practical disciplines that are designed to carry clarity, compassion, and courage right through the middle of turbulent times.
So if the crisis is noise and performance, ALM is the systematic attempt to cut through that, to collapse the noise so this LHI, this uncompromised coherence, can actually function.
That's the goal. And they package this whole demand into a pretty powerful motto, the world's call to lead alive again.
Lead alive again. It's evocative.
It is. But the key, and this is where the structure comes in, is that LHI needs a framework to be applied globally. You can't just transform, say, the UN or a national government with good intentions alone.
Right. You need mechanics.
Exactly. That transition from crisis to coherence requires what ALM calls its living architecture.
Okay, let's get into that. Section one, the foundational architecture of clarity. This structure, you're saying, is built on four core documents.
Four core documents, yeah. They're designed to carry the, quote, soul of leadership and governance and dictate how power should function.
Okay, first one up.
The Awakened Leadership Charter. This one defines the external relationship. Think of it like the covenant between the power holder, the leader, the institution, and the people they serve.
So it establishes these duty lines of leadership.
That's their term, yeah.
Duty lines.
Okay, duty lines. It sounds a bit like traditional constitutional stuff, but how does this charter actually enforce these minimum duties, especially the ones they say no government or leader can bypass? ALM isn't a world government.
No, it's not. And that's the essential challenge and maybe the innovation here. The charter operates entirely on moral and cultural authority, not legal coercion.
Okay. So it's not about lawsuits in courts.
Not primarily. It defines what visible legitimacy actually looks like. Mm-hmm. It sets a non-negotiable standard that authority owes its citizens. It's a moral baseline.
And if institutions adopt the ALM framework, then they are voluntarily subjecting themselves to this covenant. So if they fail to uphold it, the framework itself implies an immediate erosion of that chosen legitimacy.
So it's kind of a self-policing mechanism based on principle. A transparency and accountability tool.
You could put it that way. If a leader bypasses these minimum duties, the charter itself serves as the internal moral indictment, regardless of external legal loopholes.
Okay, interesting. So that's the charter, the outward promise. Mm. How does that contrast with the second document?
That's the Awakened Leadership Constitution. And while the charter governs the external relationship, the Constitution is the internal law of the movement itself.
Internal law, meaning for ALM itself.
Exactly. It outlines the rules of authority within the ALM structure. It details how clarity that core concept is held, how it's transmitted, how it's safeguarded across nations and institutions that adopt the framework.
So it's designed to make sure ALM doesn't fall into the same traps it's trying to solve: performance, power corruption, losing clarity.
Right. The Constitution aims for internal coherence, which is critical because the third document is quite different. It's the Awakened Leadership Manifesto.
And this one is described as directional fire.
Except.
Sounds intense.
It's pure advocacy. It's the why.
The rationale.
Yeah. The manifesto explains why this awakening is needed now. It focuses intensely on the systemic cost of delay, human suffering, environmental decay, the loss of trust we talked about. It's basically the movement's rallying cry, designed to create urgency.
Got it. Charter's the promise. Constitution is the internal rules. Manifesto is the why now. What's the fourth?
The Awakened Leadership Principles. Now, if the charter is the covenant and the Constitution is the rulebook, the principles are the daily operating standards. This is where the rubber meets the road for individuals.
Okay, moving from the abstract to concrete actions like...
Like presence, integrity, restraint, service, and public trust. These are the day-to-day benchmarks.
These principles need to be pretty detailed to be practical, though. For instance, what does the principle of restraint actually mean for, say, a head of state thinking about military action? Or using surveillance tech.
It implies a really rigorous self-assessment, an ethical checkpoint before exercising power. Restraint means not just using the maximum power you have simply because you can.
Okay.
It mandates proportionality, thinking about the long-term human cost, making sure decisions are rooted in truth, not just political expediency or, you know, emotional reaction.
So it connects back to that idea of presence.
Exactly. It means leadership exercised from a place of being fully accountable, fully aware of the ripple effects of every single action.
Okay, so that sets up the foundational architecture. But you mentioned it's not purely philosophical. There are specific instruments designed to operationalize this LHI to, as they say, pulse through the bloodstream of leadership.
Yes, the instruments are key. They turn the high principles into immediate actionable intelligence, or at least that's the goal.
And this is where it gets very contemporary, very 21st century. The Awakened Leadership Compass. They actually call it the global gift of clarity.
Right.
And our sources explicitly note it's a practical tool, an embodiment instrument. And get this, the first GPT-based tool designed to help nations and leaders find clarity in chaos.
Yeah. The GPT tool inclusion is Well, it's probably the most surprising synthesis in the whole movement, isn't it?
It really is. Merging this deep philosophical quest with cutting-edge AI.
We have to assume, though, that this compass isn't like a standard data analysis tool. It can't be. If it's designed for awakened clarity,
right,
it must be trained extensively on the movement's own stuff. The lexicon, the charter, the principles.
So the input wouldn't just be data points like GDP figures or troop numbers?
Probably not exclusively. A leader might input a high-stakes scenario, maybe outlining the conflict, the political pressures, the potential outcomes, the ethical dilemmas.
And the compass functions more like a...
Right.
An ethical co-pilot.
That's a good way to put it. Its output likely wouldn't be, here's the best path to win, but something more like, here's the path of highest integrity and service aligned with human first values.
Like a real-time moral alignment check.
Yeah, helping the leader cut through the noise of immediate political survival to actually discern the truth, according to ALM's definition. It might prompt, does this decision honor the duty lines of the charter?
Wow. That makes the compass less of a predictive model and much more of a moral filter. That's an extraordinary application of generative AI, if it works like that.
It is. And this tool, the compass, is presumably utilized within their next instrument, the Awakened Leadership Decision Framework.
Okay, so a framework for using the compass and other inputs.
Right. This is described as a highly structured, disciplined workflow, specifically for those moments where decisions cannot fail, high-stakes stuff.
It moves the process beyond just gut instinct or, you know, listening to your loudest advisor.
That seems to be the intent. It mandates ordering inputs, rigorously weighing dissent from different perspectives, and ensuring that authority is always, always aligned with responsibility.
Okay, let's break that down. What are the practical implications of ordering inputs and weighing dissent? Because in a typical cabinet meeting, input often gets weighed by political clout or seniority, right?
Exactly. This framework seems to try and level that playing field. Ordering inputs might mean establishing that certain inputs like ethical counsel based on the principles or human impact assessments or long-term sustainability projections take precedence over others, like maybe immediate political poll numbers or short-term economic gain.
Prioritizing principles over expediency.
That's the idea. And weighing dissent means ensuring that voices rooted in the ALM principles, even if they're the minority view in the room, are given genuine systemic weight before a final decision gets locked in.
This sounds like a mechanism built specifically to counteract that performance and narrative crisis we started with, by forcing accountability at the highest cognitive levels of leadership.
I think that's exactly what it is. And this whole process, the compass, the framework, it's all underpinned by the awakened leadership model and philosophy.
Which is?
They call it the living lens and the remembered structure. Its core job is just to collapse systemic noise, activate that living human intelligence, and reveal the next right step. Not just the politically savvy step, but the right one.
Okay. But for everyone to operate from the same understanding, especially using these tools and frameworks, they need a common language, right?
Absolutely. Which brings us to the Awakened Leadership Lexicon.
A lexicon. Like a dictionary.
Pretty much. But a living dictionary, they say. Dedicated to restoring precision, integrity, and consciousness to the language used in leadership and governance.
Why is that so important?
Well, think about the words we hear constantly in policy debates. Power, peace, purpose, security, growth.
Yeah, they get thrown around a lot.
And often they're stripped of their deeper ethical meaning, used mostly for political spin. The lexicon aims to redefine them, grounding them firmly back in human first values.
Can you give an example? Like, how might they redefine power?
Well, instead of just the ability to command or compel, maybe it's defined as the capacity to serve and enable life. Or peace isn't just the absence of war, but the active presence of dignity, mutual respect, and justice.
Okay, I see. This ensures a shared conscious language across everyone adopting the framework.
And it's crucial if you're going to use a GPT-based tool like the compass. You absolutely need to ensure the language it processes and generates is ethically sound, aligned with the core principles, not politically compromised.
Now, that makes sense. You need clean inputs for clean outputs, especially when dealing with morality.
Exactly.
Okay, so we've looked at the internal blueprint, the architecture, the tools. The natural next question is, how wide do they intend this to go? What's the actual global scope of this transformation they're proposing?
Right. This moves us into section two, and this is where the sheer scale of their ambition really becomes crystal clear.
So how big are we talking?
Well, the ALM explicitly states it is not bound by sector, profession, culture, or geography.
not bound by anything.
Pretty much. It spans, and this is their phrase, the full arc of human challenge and possibility. The scope is just breathtaking, total.
Okay, let's try and pin that down. Where specifically do they intend to speak into? What areas?
Well, the sources list huge fundamental moments in relationships. Things like moments of war and peace, the actual evolution of societies and civilizations, the integrity of institutions and systems.
Relational stuff.
Absolutely. And the relationship between governments and the public, between culture and tradition. It's comprehensive historical and social scope.
And does that translate into practical sectors too, or is it just high-level philosophy?
No, no, it gets very practical. Their reach into application is just as broad. They aim to inject these human-first values, this LHI commitment, into deeply technical and specialized sectors.
Like what?
We're talking technology and AI. We saw that with the governance arm, but also education and health, finance and economies, climate and the environment, safety and security, even the future of cities and public life.
Wow. Let's pause on that for a second. Implementing human-first values in, say, finance or climate policy, that must look vastly different from applying them in education. What does human-first mean in finance, according to them?
That's a great question. In finance, it would likely mean redefining value itself, moving beyond pure profit maximization as the sole metric.
Okay.
It would probably mandate that investments, economic policies, they have to prioritize systemic stability, environmental sustainability, the dignity of labor, and make those measurable inputs within that decision framework we talked about.
So you'd have to factor those in alongside ROI.
Exactly. The goal isn't necessarily to eliminate finance, but to ensure that capital flows become, in their view, a moral act that serves life rather than just extracting value.
That is a fundamental challenge to the way much of the global economy currently operates.
It absolutely is. And to manage this extraordinary scope, this ambition, the ALM organizes its framework into five distinct governance arms. This is how they plan to bring it down to earth globally.
Five arms. So it's not just one monolithic.
Right. Think of it less as one single organization and more like a five-pronged advisory and implementation body. Each arm is specialized, covering everything from like the hyper-local government level all the way up to global cooperation.
Okay, let's walk through them. Which one is foundational? Where does it start for, say, an existing government?
That would likely be awakened governance. They call it the pioneering arm.
Pioneering arm, okay.
This arm focuses on applying the principles at the local and national levels. It works within existing governments, institutions, systems. It's about aligning that authority with responsibility, embedding human-first values in local public life, ministerial functions, city administration.
So it's the practical engine for restoring legitimacy from the ground up within the current structures.
That seems to be the idea. Yeah. Bottom up and inside out.
Then we scale up. Way up, based on what you said earlier. Awaken global governance.
Yes. This arm addresses shared responsibility across borders, and it attempts to influence the biggest international bodies.
And this is where that massive claim comes in. How about the UN?
This is it. The source material contains the truly monumental claim here. This arm seeks to grow into a body larger in scope and higher in trust than the United Nations.
Larger in scope and higher in trust than the UN. That's enormous. Why not just aim to replace the UN if they think the current system is failing?
That's a key point. Their source of authority is fundamentally different.
Mm.
The UN's authority, you know, it's rooted in treaties, national sovereignty, political agreements, member states.
Right, legal and political structures.
Exactly. The ALM's claimed authority is rooted purely in trust and clarity. So they aim to complement the UN structure, not necessarily replace it immediately. They want to complete what they see as missing.
Which is?
The soul, perhaps. The moral coherence, the uncompromised clarity that can't be negotiated away by competing political interests. They want to set a new, higher standard for a cooperative global leadership that the UN, by its very structure, often struggles to achieve.
Okay, so if the UN is the mechanism of international law and diplomacy, the ALM global governance arm is trying to become the mechanism of international conscience, setting standards nations choose to adopt for greater legitimacy.
That's a very good way to frame it. Precisely.
Okay, moving down from the global level back to the national political sphere, there's awakened political governance. How is this different from the first arm, awakened governance?
It seems more focused specifically on the conduct of national leadership itself. Presidents, prime ministers, cabinets. It sets rigorous standards for their legitimacy, their delivery on promises, and the public trust they command, and how that shapes global perception.
So it's about the quality and integrity of leadership at the very top nationally.
Yeah. The success of this arm, according to the source, is crucial because successful implementation at the national level, leaders acting with clarity and integrity, provides that powerful, visible example that impacts global leadership norms. It sets the standard of service for nations.
And that standard isn't just GDP growth.
No, it's measured by success in upholding human dignity and the ALM principles alongside other metrics.
Got it. Next arm, awakened AI governance. This brings us back to that interesting tension between deep philosophy and cutting-edge tech. What specific guardrails are they proposing, especially since they're already using a GPT Compass tool themselves?
The guardrails are about ensuring that innovation itself is viewed and conducted as a moral act.
A moral act, okay.
They aim to prevent technology, especially powerful AI, from becoming this separate, value-neutral force that just does what it's programmed to do, regardless of consequence. They insist AI must serve life, human dignity, the integrity of governance.
So guiding technology with ethics and purpose from the outset.
Exactly. Demanding that invention acts as a guardian of freedom and life, not, you know, an instrument of unchecked surveillance or control and manipulation.
Which means integrating their lexicon, their principles, deep into the AI development and deployment phases,
yeah.
Not just tacking on an ethics review at the end.
Absolutely. It has to be foundational.
Okay. And the final arm.
The fifth arm is awakened diplomacy. Now, in a world where diplomacy often feels like transactional negotiation or just positional power struggles.
Yeah, my country's interest versus yours.
Right. The ALM advocates for presence before position.
Presence before position. What does that actually look like in practice? I mean, a diplomat might be legally required to hold a hard-line position for their nation.
It seems to require a fundamental shift in the nature of the dialogue itself. Presence before position means entering a negotiation rooted in self-awareness, in truth, as ALM defines it, rather than just clinging to predetermined demands.
So less focus on winning, more on understanding.
And on communicating in a way that genuinely seeks to lower temperatures to enable settlement without loss of dignity for any party involved. The goal is restoring credibility by putting human-first values like respect, truth, clarity at the absolute center of international exchange, replacing the power struggle with, well, clarity.
That's a radical shift for diplomacy.
It is. And it leads us naturally into Section 3, which really gets to the core, the heart of the movement's internal operating system, its philosophy, and the principles that are meant to hold this entire vast framework together.
Right. The foundation everything else rests on.
These are the six non-negotiable principles, the moral constitution, if you like, of the movement. And crucially, unlike political platforms, they claim these do not shift with power or political convenience.
Okay, let's hear them. They start high, right?
They do. Principle one, truth as the first light. Principle two, clarity as strength.
Clarity as strength. By mandating clarity, they're directly rejecting that crisis state they identified earlier.
Exactly. Confusion is not accepted as destiny. Then comes number three, purpose before power.
Purpose before power. That's a direct challenge to political realism, isn't it? Saying authority has to serve something real, something beyond itself.
It is. And then perhaps the most profound claim, number four, human values as law.
Human values as law. What values are they listing?
They list courage, peace, kindness, dignity, love, respect, and responsibility. And they explicitly state these are non-optional in governance under their framework.
Okay, here's where we need to push a bit, maybe. These are wonderful ideals, but countless global charters and declarations include similar language. What makes ALM think their definition or commitment will actually hold up when push comes to shove, when convenience, self-interest, or political survival kicks in?
That's the critical question. They seem to answer it partly with the final two principles. Number five, awakening as a heart of leadership. This demands that inner transformation we talked about.
Right. The leader has to embody it.
Yes.
Yeah.
And number six, service as presence, responsibility as honor. This reinforces the idea that every choice a leader makes leaves a mark on humanity. It frames authority not as a right, but as a temporary honor used solely to support life, not to misuse it.
So the principles themselves demand a certain state of being from the leader.
And to uphold these principles as law, they need incredibly clear, unshakable definitions. They can't allow these terms to get watered down or co-opted by political interpretation.
Let's zero in on two key ones then. Their definition of truth. How do they define that given its contested nature?
Right. For ALM, truth is defined as alignment. Alignment with what is real, what is human, and what is life-serving. And they stress, very importantly, it is not the opinion of just one ideology, one culture, or one faith.
So it's not relative, but it's also not dogmatic.
It seems they're aiming for a kind of systemic honesty. Truth is the coherence, inner and outer, that emerges when those core human values are consistently chosen over temporary convenience or political manipulation.
Okay. And their definition of awakening itself, that word can carry a lot of baggage, often spiritual or religious. How do they frame it for governance?
They're very careful here. They define awakening primarily as the widening of awareness, the deepening of consciousness, and importantly, the clarity of discernment.
Discernment, making wise choices.
Exactly. And they explicitly state it is not limited to spirituality or a religious definition. This makes it potentially accessible to leaders across all political and cultural spectrums.
So you don't need a specific belief system?
Apparently not. You just need to commit to making decisions that honor life, protect dignity, embody courage and responsibility. It's presented as a state of active, uncompromised discernment in action.
That grounding in human values, but also acknowledging the difficulty, must lead to their stance on imperfection. You can't demand perfection in leaders or systems.
Absolutely not. And they acknowledge this directly. The movement states, no human being, no nation, no institution is without barriers, struggles, or wounds. They explicitly do not demand perfection.
Which would make the whole thing unusable in the real world.
Right. The commitment is simpler, they say. It's just to try.
To try.
To try. To choose kindness when anger might be easier. To choose responsibility when escape feels tempting. It's the sustained attempt, the commitment to the direction, not flawless execution that they seem to require.
Okay, this commitment to try logically opens the door for a much wider range of potential adopters, doesn't it? If perfection isn't the bar.
It does. And their list of target adopters shows just how systemic they want the change to be. It's incredibly comprehensive.
Who's on the list?
Okay. They target specific ministries and city administrations within existing governments. They target entire nations, hoping to align national vision and diplomacy with ALM principles. They target large global institutions, think universities, major public bodies, even bodies like the UN itself.
So governmental and institutional levels. What else?
They also target global forums, multilateral assemblies where global norms are shaped. And really interestingly, they target entire civilizations and societies.
Civilizations. How does that work?
It seems to suggest aiming for a deeper cultural renewal, restoring collective trust in fundamental human values and shared heritage across whole cultures, traditions, communities. It's incredibly ambitious.
And finally, individuals.
And naturally, individual leaders, heads of state, top diplomats, institutional chiefs. These individuals can apparently engage directly for high trust clarity sessions, presumably using things like the compass and the decision framework for their personal leadership challenges.
Okay, so if the commitment is to try, and the target audience is basically everyone, how is success measured? If external validation, like legal status or widespread acclaim, isn't the main priority, what are the visible, measurable signals they look for?
Right. How do they know if it's working? Success, they state, is measured strictly in practice. It's about real-world outcomes.
Gotcha.
The signals include things like visible legitimacy, where those duty lines are openly honored by leaders, restored trust between the public and institutions, the implementation of tangible human-first standards across policy, finance, technology.
Observable changes.
Yes. They also cite coherence in crisis leaders making grounded decisions that actually reduce chaos instead of making it worse. And then the bigger picture metrics. Global adoption of the core works, the charter, principles, etc. Evidence of cultural renewal and measurable impact in concrete areas like peace treaties, public safety stats, health outcomes, educational quality.
So the ultimate proof is in the pudding.
Essentially, yes. They conclude, the signal of success is practice itself.
Okay, this brings us neatly to section 4. We need to look at the sort of artistic and philosophical soul driving this, the founder's voice, and then critically examine the unique and frankly quite contradictory organizational structure of the ALM itself.
Right, because stepping back from the very structured governance arms and frameworks, we encounter this other dimension. The founder's unique philosophical prose and poetry, it seems designed less to inform the mind and more to awaken the reader's soul, as they might put it.
Can you give an example? You mentioned Wounded Child.
Yes. Texts like Wounded Child seem to function as an urgent call to awareness. They kind of bypass dry policy arguments and speak directly to a perceived spiritual and societal collapse, you know, themes of lost dreams, feeling like a failed life, even with material success, running from inner truth.
So it's designed to make you feel the crisis first.
Exactly. Feel it before you try to fix it with policy. Then you have other pieces like Someday.
Which is?
That paints the hopeful future vision of the movement. A world where love is remembered, selflessness is the norm. And interestingly, education will ripen into knowing. Not just learning facts, but deep understanding.
It sounds quite utopian.
It paints a picture of systemic harmony, yeah.
Yeah.
Where the brain will rest and the heart keep glowing, which seems to signify that living human intelligence finally prevailing over just intellectual noise or ego.
And there's another one. This is your home.
Right. That one reads like a very explicit, almost emotional invitation, particularly for weary souls, maybe leaders themselves, to drop the masks, the egos, find rest, and experience what it calls divine healing.
This really reinforces that core belief we keep coming back to. Mm. Inner personal transformation has to come before, or at least alongside, outer systemic change.
It seems to be the absolute psychological prerequisite for the whole global framework they've built. You have to do the inner work to use the outer tools effectively.
The founder even describes something called an unnamed offering. Not a book, but a transmission. A body of frequency. What does that even mean in this context? If it's a transmission, how does that land with, say, a skeptical diplomat in Brussels?
Yeah, that language is striking. It suggests this particular offering is designed to bypass the usual intellectual gatekeepers, maybe reach the intuitive core. It sounds like highly curated philosophical work, perhaps delivered through very specific, personalized engagements.
Not a mass market book tour.
Definitely not. It seems designed to spark remembrance, their word, of essential human principles, rather than being a traditional policy white paper. And it arrives, they say, only when it's fully alive, prioritizing the purity and impact of the message over just mass dissemination.
Okay, now here's the rub, the essential tension we've been building towards. Despite this absolutely monumental global governance ambition aiming for a standard higher in trust than the UN, the actual administrative and legal reality of the ALM is, well, it's radically unique,
mm-hmm.
and arguably sovereign in a way that clashes with that ambition.
This is the ultimate contradiction, isn't it? The ALM is defined, in its own words, as a soul-born initiative.
Soul-born.
Which means, practically, it is not a registered NGO. It's not a trust, not a foundation, not a commercial entity. It stands, they claim, sovereign.
So sovereign, meaning what exactly?
Meaning rooted in its own inner clarity, its own principles, not dependent on external legal validation or institutional structures.
And legally, how does it operate day to day?
Legally, it operates under a sole proprietorship held by the founder, Sandeep Mehra.
A sole proprietorship aiming to influence global governance.
Exactly. This lack of traditional institutional structure is clearly a conscious choice. It allows it to avoid the political compromises, the fundraising pressures, the bureaucratic machinery that often plagued traditional NGOs and global bodies.
They trade structure for purity, perhaps?
That seems to be the rationale. They choose coherence over conventional structure. And the funding model reflects this radical independence, too.
How so?
Contributions are described as personal, voluntary, and this is critical, non-tax-exempt.
Non-tax-exempt. So donors get no tax break.
Correct. Contributions are received directly by the founder personally and are stated to be used to sustain the mission, not the machinery. They are intentionally foregoing the traditional mechanisms of scale and influence that come with large-scale, tax-exempt fundraising.
Wow. That means they're sacrificing potentially huge amounts of funding and the political influence that often comes with it purely to maintain the integrity of the original transmission, the soul-born nature.
It appears so. And this absolute necessity for alignment, for purity, drives their entire engagement model, which seems highly curated, almost exclusive.
You found evidence of this in the materials.
Oh, yeah. It's quite explicit. There are practical limits mentioned, like only one spot per week apply for an exclusive 1.1 awakening session.
One spot a week for the whole world.
Seems like it for that specific offering. And requests for advisory roles, for speeches, even just general communication, they state these are personally reviewed to ensure alignment.
So they vet everyone who wants to engage.
Heavily, it seems. They state outright, we respond only when aligned and only selected will be confirmed. It's a very high barrier to entry.
Which, again, prioritizes the integrity and purity of the message over just maximizing the volume of engagement or influence.
If the mission is truly soul-born, as they claim, they likely feel they cannot afford to dilute the philosophy by engaging with misaligned interests just for the sake of scale or funding.
But the paradox is huge, isn't it? The very structure that protects its purity. The sole proprietorship, the non-tax exempt status, the selective engagement is also arguably what limits its ability to exert traditional systemic pressure on the very global systems it seeks to fundamentally transform.
That is the core paradox, yes. How do you change the world if you deliberately keep the world at arm's length until it aligns with you?
Okay, this brings us to our final synthesis for this deep dive. The ALM is just this fascinating duality, isn't it? On one hand, a highly structured, very systemic framework, charter, constitution, AI tools, governance arms, trying to create a whole new layer of global governance.
And on the other hand, a deeply philosophical, intensely human-centric mission, rooted in radical individual sovereignty and inner transformation, human values as law, awakening.
The movement really attempts to resolve that age-old tension between the philosophical source of why and the how should be, and the hyper-practical, high-stakes goal of running countries and global systems.
Yeah, it seeks coherence. Coherence between the inner life of the leader, their culture, their ethics, their clarity, and the outer function of the state. The policies, the laws, the diplomacy. All aimed at restoring a kind of systemic honesty to the global system.
And the ultimate measure of ALM's credibility, its success, really hinges on whether this internal, soul-born commitment can actually translate into meaningful, measurable transformation out there in the messy, chaotic reality of global politics.
Exactly. So what does this all mean for you, the listener, as you process this? The movement argues that leadership collapses when clarity is absent and legitimacy erodes. They say their success is signaled by practice itself.
Which leaves us with a critical question to ponder, doesn't it? Given the movement's claim to be a soul-born mission with its radical independence, its focus entirely on inner clarity and voluntary alignment, can it realistically achieve the kind of massive, global, institutional, and political transformation it seeks?
Yeah, what's the tipping point? Is there a point where that deep, non-negotiable, soul-born commitment can successfully overcome the sheer inertia and the practical necessity of traditional political and legal machinery in the global arena? Can the soul truly govern without the machine?
A provocative thought to leave you with.